This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the In Focus podcast. I'm your host, G. Sampath. Gukesh Dommaraju, the 17-year-old Indian chess prodigy, has become the youngest player ever to win the Candidates Tournament. As he broke a 40-year-old record that was in Garry Kasparov's name, Gukesh became only the second Indian after V. Anand to win a candidates event and earn the right to challenge the world champion for the title. But Gukesh's journey hasn't been easy. He almost didn't qualify for the candidates tournament this year, making the grade only at the last minute thanks to a hastily organized event in Chennai. And the moments before his victory were full of nail-biting drama. On the women's side, Koneru Hampi and R. Vaishali had their ups and downs, but they both finished close to the top with plenty of positives to take forward. To tell us more about the Gukesh story, what it means for India and where we go from here, we have with us Rakesh Rao, our in-house chess expert. Rakesh, thank you so much for joining us and welcome back to In Focus.
Thank you so much, Sampath. It's been a long time and thank you so much for having me on the show.
So, Rakesh, I was just wondering if you can start by talking a little bit about the significance of this victory. You know, historically, he's the youngest ever, you know, in terms of records. How Gukesh got into this particular edition of the candidates, there was a lot of drama around that as well. What this means for India, etc. And also, on a personal level, I was just curious, you followed chess very closely for decades. Before the start of the event, who did you think was going to win the candidates?
Okay, so I'll start from the last question first. Before the event started, like many of those who really kept a close eye on this event, of course, I thought it will be either Fabiano Caruana has been world number two for a very long time now. He's the second best player in the world after Magnus Carlsen. And Nepomniachtchi, because he was a two-time defending champion. And is very, very solid because of his experience. And Nakamura, not so much, because he has become more of a streamer these days, but his quality of chess is really top class. So these two in particular, Fabiano or like Nepomniachtchi. Now, coming to your question about the importance and the significance of this win, I think, Sampath, it is phenomenal. In today's world, when we talk of candidates, the new generation of chess followers, or at least those who have been keeping an eye on it for the last, say, about 10 years, it's not the same as it used to be, because the history of candidates dates back to almost, you have to start from 1948. But then that was the time when FIDE, the world body, wanted to look for a way to find the best player in the world and to have a world champion of its own. So a lot of things happened. They would invite the top six top-rated players. Then it became eight and then 10. And then there was, a lot of problems within the chess community. So this particular tournament was kind of, it couldn't be held because it was a divided house. So things became better in the 90s, just a bit, but then again, it had to be stopped again. So from the Indian perspective, Vishwanathan Anand was the only one to have played and won the tournament. And there was also a time when two different candidates were held because there were two different bodies trying to say that, look, we are the best in the world. And of course, to cut the long story short, that way, if you look at what has happened in the last 10 years, once it was unified, once the title became, there was only one man who was an undisputed world champion, and that happened in 2008 when Vishwanathan Anand won against Vladimir Kramnik in Germany. That was the time when the world believed that, all right, now we have a champion. A true undisputed world champion. And thereafter, we have been having the candidates tournament like this. Like we have had these eight players, double round robin, and so on and so forth. So since then, if you see, there's been a kind of a domination. I mean, it was Magnus Carlsen who won it once. And thereafter, he became the world champion for nearly a decade. So he never returned. I mean, he was not required to play. But the rest of the world's elite was involved. They were involved. So we've had a Sarki Karjaikin who challenged Magnus and lost. Then I think it was Fabiano who won it once and lost in the last two championships. It has been, you know, Nepomishi. Now, it was more like, you know, the world believing that what is this candidates tournament? And jokingly, people would say it was almost like Rafael Nadal, you know, winning the French Open, in the sense that 127 players would play the first seven rounds, first six rounds, eventually to go and lose to, you know, just lose to, you know, like Nadal in the final. That's what the joke was. This was much like that. People would play in the candidates, battle it out for you know, at least close to 3 weeks, and then go and lose to Magnus. But since Magnus declined to continue with his reign at the top, he said, no, I've had enough of it. I don't like the system. And he maintains that this is not the best way to find the world champion. So to that extent, I mean, the candidates, the value of candidates hasn't gone down because that hasn't impacted. I mean, if you just look at Magnus not playing, it hasn't taken away much from the candidates because he was not required to play. But when it comes to the world title match without the best player playing in the cycle, that, of course, is going to hurt. Because last time also we saw that, you know, it was between Nepo and the eventual world champion Dinglerin. And people said that, okay, it is a world title match, all right. But it doesn't involve the best player in the world. So that is just to give you a brief background about what candidates tournament is all about. It's an invitational event where there are ways of picking these eight names. But not everybody can make it. So we were lucky to have three Indians right there.
Isn't it like the top eight players automatically get called for this event, the top eight rank?
They don't. No. It is not like that. There is a way of doing it. It's like, you know, the entire thing. If you look at it, like if you just take a quick look at how these eight guys made it. Nepomishi, because he was the man who lost in the World Championship match to Dinglerin. So he was an automatic qualifier. Then you had the top three guys from the World Cup, which was actually Magnus Carlsen, Pragyananda and Fabiano Caruana. Since Magnus didn't qualify, the fourth place guy was Nijat Abasov. He made it. So top three came from the World Cup. Then there were top two finishers from the Grand Swiss, which is the toughest open tournament in the world. And here it was Vidit Gujarati who made it because he won the tournament. And Nakamura was second. So two more were added. That took the list, the number to six. Then it was the highest placed player in the 2023rd FIDE circuit who's not already qualified. Because this particular thing was known only on the 30th of December. That is as of 30th of December. By this time, since Fabiano had already qualified and he was the guy who had topped the circuit, Bukesh was second. So second guy, obviously, because the rule said that a person not already qualified. So Bukesh was the one. He made it. And then finally, the highest rated player as of January 2024, which was Alireza Firuja. So that's how these eight guys made it. So see, when you have a sport which is played in more than 200 countries, to pick eight guys to play in the world championship or for the world title match, it's not easy. So you have a way, you have a device where if you're strong enough in the world, you have all these opportunities. Through all these ways, you can be among the top eight. Now, that's how significant it was. I mean, these are not handpicked guys. They have battled it out and have proved themselves and they deserve to be there. So among these eight players, if you are the youngest player, you are the sixth seed, and for you to come and win the tournament. And of course, the guy who wins it, Gukesh. Now, Gukesh was the one, he still remains the second youngest ever to qualify for the candidates. I recall it was 1959 when Bobby Fischer, you know, like as a 16-year-old, he played in the candidates for the first time. So that's how significant it was that after so many years, you've had somebody as young as Gukesh taking part in this premier tournament. So he goes on to win the tournament. Of course, you don't expect a six seeded guy to win.
Also, there was the tournament in Chennai was also the tournament which was organized in Chennai. If it weren't for that, Gokish wouldn't have got the points to qualify, isn't it?
No, I'll tell you what has happened is there are two ways of, you know, like looking at it. In, you know, in this particular year or this particular cycle, if Gokish was lucky that there was a tournament organized just so that he could do it, I mean, it wasn't just so easy. I mean, he still had to win it and to get ample points. But at the same time, Ali Reza Firuja did exactly that. There were tournaments organized for him where he won 9-9. I mean, he just kept winning those rounds against opposition, which was weak, but he took his rating right up there. He surpassed Wesley So, and, you know, it became so easy for him. But then a lot of people criticized that. How could you allow these two tournaments to be organized? Because from now on, I think every time we have this event, there will be specified events that after this, no more events can be added at the last minute. So both Gokish and Ali Reza that way were fortunate to be part of events which were specifically organized to help individuals like these two, and they made the most of it. So yes, that particular event in particular, if we talk about the Chennai Grandmaster event, which was so significant because it came at a time when Gokish was suffering a serious loss of form. If you recall, he made it to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. But from that point onwards, that was August. And from that month onwards till December, his form just dipped. He just struggled with a lot of things. Although he did, I mean, especially the Grand Swiss, which with it won, Gokish lost more than 25 rating points in one tournament. Being the fifth seed, he finished 81st. And imagine, I mean, when you take a tumble like that, your confidence is hit for a six. And then he goes to play in the London Chess Classic in December. This was just before that. And he was seeded one. He finished third. So that was not so bad. But then things changed with this Chennai Grandmaster. He won that tournament. On the 30th of December, he was told that he has qualified. From there, he goes to play in the Waikanae, where he finishes joint first. Loses in the tiebreak and comes, you know, like then he finishes second there. And thereafter, he regains a lot of these lost rating. You know, at one point, his live rating was down to 2715, which is today more than 2750. So you can see the, you know, the kind of roller coaster ride which has had since the last World Cup. But give credit to this youngster for actually, you know, making it happen in a way that he peaked at the right time.
Right. Gokish did, of course, definitely peak at the right time. So, Rakesh, I was wondering, in your observations and assessment, what sets Gokish apart from the other bunch of teenagers who are carping at his heels, so to speak? You know, somebody tweeted today that one of the most uncertain things in the world is the India's chess number one, which is a great thing to say. You know, so there's Pragnananda, Vidit Gujarati, Arjun Irigesi. So what is in this particular tournament, what did you observe about his style of play, his approach? How is he different from the other Indians? You know, in fact, when I also remember Carlsen, before the tournament, he analyzed all the eight players and he said Gokish stands no chance of winning it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, but if you just look at how Gokish kind of evolved in this event, I mean the way he became, I mean, it was almost like a boy playing like a man right through. And it wasn't so easy for him. Obviously, I mean, nobody expected it to be easy. But the point is, first of all, let's just talk about his, I mean, the kind of, you know, skill sets which he displayed. Number one, I thought his preparation, the opening preparation was very, very solid. He came prepared. He didn't look in any kind of serious trouble in the opening phase in any of it. In fact, he even went on to surprise people like Nepo and all. I mean, that wasn't so easy. I mean, there were times when he tried to trick his opponent in the opening, which is not his style. I mean, we all know that these guys, the elite, they save something for you for all these big events. But Gokish wasn't false at all. And Gokish, number two, which I've always maintained right from his very young age that I've been keeping in track of, you know, keeping a track on his style and what he is good at, I think that is his ability to calculate. You know, every time he came under time pressure, that is where he needed to get the right continuation going. And he was so accurate with it, so consistently accurate. And his ability to have the sense of danger. Only once, I think, in that match against Firuja in round 7, that I think his sense of danger kind of, you know, like just didn't. I mean, you can say that his sense of danger just let him down for that one moment.
That's the only match he lost, right?
Only game he lost. And funnily, after the tournament ended, he made this observation that, you know, when, I mean, all these millions of people who followed that the particular game were left with the impression that Gukesh was winning that game more than once. At least, I mean, there were occasions where he looked completely winning. But what he said after the tournament was that when he went back to the room, because the following day happened to be a rest day, and of course, he was shattered. He left the room. I mean, he left the playing hall in that shape and completely winning. And then he just made a mistake towards the, you know, when the 40 move control was on, just had seconds left on his clock, and he made that mistake and lost. So what he's revealed after the match was, he said, I wasn't completely winning. It does, I mean, the evaluation bar, which shows who is, you know, whether white is ahead or black, that does show that Gukesh was way superior. But the point is, practically, when you see it all over the board, it's very difficult to find that kind of continuation for a super fast supercomputer or whatever you call that computer analysis. It's all fine because computers think in a certain way. But here, after 4 hours of fatigue, it's very difficult for a human being to find that kind of a continuation. So he wasn't feeling so bad. So this guy goes out to play pickleball with his coach. Imagine you just lost a match and, I mean, lost a game the previous day and today's a day of rest. He makes the most of it. One of his friends comes there with some home-cooked food and he enjoys that. And then he starts believing from that point, that particular day, that rest day, he says, now I can go on and win because I think I'm in great shape. So this particular game, according to Gukesh, was a turning point because that made him, that gave him the belief, just brought back that kind of spirit that, yes, if I do things right, I can win. So that disappointment of losing the previous game, he used it as a strength. He said, no, I think it's almost like saying that, okay, I've committed my last mistake already. Now, whatever that I'm going to do, I'm going to do it really well. And from there on, he never lost a match. He stayed in control. He kept winning a lot of important ones the way he targeted. So secondly, what I really was impressed with was his ability to stay aware of where the tournament was and where he was in the tournament, in the sense that he targeted two players. Of course, when you look at the rating, you can't target a world number 3 or a world number 4. But in this particular case, Alireza was the one whose form wasn't with him. He was struggling. And he decided to really target him towards the end of the tournament, because he knew that these are the two games which he had to win in order to stay in contention. At that point in time, he was trailing by half a point. And what happened was absolutely brilliant. The way he tricked Alireza Firuja, and of course, the way he beat, you know, like Abasov around earlier. Abasov was the one who was the lowest ranked player, and he made it because Magnus Carlsen beat you. So everybody knew that as far as the rating went, as far as the playing strength went, he was the man to be targeted. And here was this guy, Nijat, who never lost a game with white pieces. And he was playing white against Gukesh. And Gukesh still foxed him to win. So give a lot of credit to Gukesh for his mental strength, for his determination. And also one of the factors that I saw in this particular tournament was how cool he stayed. He stayed like a cucumber. He just never looked hassled, except that show of emotion during that game against Alireza in the 7th round. The way he held himself, I mean, the way he conducted himself, the way he carried himself around, I think he was just brilliant. And that is where I see that. I see a lot of maturity in his play. And of course, he has always been one of those most soft-spoken guys around. But I think behind all that softness was a very tough, I mean, very tough and a kind of a steely resolve, which you could see.
Right. Zakish, I remember in one of our previous chess podcasts, we had mentioned that Magnus Carlsen had rated Alireza most highly, saying he wouldn't mind coming back to play a world championship match if he was going to face Alireza in it. But Talireza had a poor tournament, and ironically, I mean, Carlsen also said after the tournament that he Gukesh turned out to be stronger than he had thought. So what are your thoughts on Alireza? I mean, you said there was a tournament organized so that he could qualify and he was winning everything. But suddenly, in this tournament, his form seemed to desert him.
Completely. See, Alireza is considered one of the top guys around. Of course, he's been in the top five of the world. He came in as the world number four. And it is just that, you know, when you are so brilliantly gifted, I think what happens is not every tournament you can play at really peak form. Somewhere initially, I remember once his form before his form, you know, like deserted him completely, and his confidence took a massive, you know, like beating. I think there was this point where he was playing very well. I mean, initially he started off by troubling, people around, but somewhere down the line he started losing his sharpness. And once you lose that confidence, I think the biggest problem which arises is that your ability to calculate, that lets you down. That means you are checking and rechecking every single time. That you can't afford to do, because that means you are consuming time. And the time format this time was such that for the first 40 moves, you were not allowed any increment. Usually for every move that you make, you get a 30-second increment. Here it was 2 hours. No matter what happens, if you run out of those 2 hours and if you haven't completed your 40th move, you'll be declared lost on time. So people never had this kind of cushion of that 30 seconds increment, and that is precisely what happened. I mean, for him to be he just won two matches. I mean, two games out of 14. You can imagine he was winless in the first six rounds, out of which he lost three, including one to Ian Nepomniachtchi in the second round, then he lost one sixth round to Vidit. And then he came and played that game against Gukesh just before the rest day. And that he won. But thereafter, he couldn't regain that kind of confidence, because he then went on to lose to Fabiano. Then round number 12 and 13, he lost to Hikaru, and then Gukesh had his revenge. So he looked vulnerable. He really looked vulnerable. And once his confidence was hit, I don't think he was the same. And I think what really hurt him was not the second game which he lost to Ian, the one which he lost to Hikaru. I think this game in round five, this was probably the one from which he never recovered. This game was a dead-drawn game. It looked like heading for a draw. It was late into the sixth hour. And then suddenly he miscalculates and he lets one move. He just misses one move from his opponent. And that led to a decisive verdict.
Right. I think, as you said, once the confidence goes, it is going to have an impact on your game as well. And there's, of course, no doubt he's a supremely talented player, and he will be back again next year. And it's good for the sport as well to see such an exciting attacking player. Now, coming to the women's section, Rakesh, we had two Indians in the fray. Koneru Hampi and Vaishali. Vaishali had a very bizarre kind of a streak, even losing everything to start with and then win everything towards the end. What are your thoughts on how the Indian girls have performed?
Oh, exceptional. In the sense, why I say exceptional is because of the way they started. I think, somebody like, if you just look at somebody like Hampi, I thought that Hampi had the game to go all the way. She had the experience, and also her head-to-head record against all these players in the fray. I think that was something that gave me a lot of confidence. I thought she, on her day, could just walk away with this tournament. But though she was seeded three, the difference between her and the rest wasn't much. The top league here. Because this was, see, if you look at the field, the women's field, that was, I think, a little more competitive, because you could actually draw a line after six players, because the top six belonged to the top 10 of the world. Then came Vaishali and the girl from Bulgaria, This girl, Salimova, made it from the World Cup, much like how, Abasov could do. But then if you just look at the balance of the field, there was this imbalance, because the last two named girls were not of the same strength, so to speak. And both didn't have the experience of playing in the elite. This was not the case when we saw in the open section. In the open section, all eight had played with each other quite frequently. But in the women's, Vaishali and Salimova didn't get those many opportunities to play among the elite or be with that kind of
tournament. What do you think happened? What do you think happened midway through the tournament for Vaishali to sort of notch up win after win after win in the last five rounds again the same set of players to whom she had lost a week earlier?
Yeah, exactly. See, if you take a closer look at how she started off and how she went about it, see, losing to the person who had won the first round, which is Stan, the eventual champion. Second round, when she lost, it wasn't so surprising because there was a point where you knew that, okay, Vaishali, given her lack of experience, lack of, the kind of opportunities which she has got to play with the top players, be seen with the elite, that hasn't happened for her. But she is a player who has been growing at a rapid rate.
Karakit, would this lack of exposure to the elite really matter in the case of Vaishali, because she could play with Pragnananda anytime she wanted? I mean, isn't that what you get an elite?
No, but then playing in these tournaments are completely different. You can train with the best or you can train with the strongest. But the point here is that you need to keep your cool and play accordingly on the big stage. Now, this was one opportunity for her where the chess world was watching. I mean, if you ask me, this is the year of the Chess Olympiad. But candidates was the tournament of the year for me, because everybody around the world, the way this game has been followed, this tournament was followed. And Vaishali is not used to that kind of a media glare. Look at the way she was treated there. I mean, so many Indians calling out her name, even when she was not doing well, people coming for autographs, photographs, selfies, whatever you call. Now, this girl has admitted that she has never felt like this in her life. Now, for her to be in a place like that, where she hasn't handled the pressure of expectations. Although the chess elite never expected her to do well, or the chess world also, but the fans were always there to cheer for her. Somehow, the way she started off, with a draw with Humpty, that must have given her some amount of confidence. Then she loses the second. Then she beats the lowest rated player. Now, for a player who is ranked 7th as a starting rank of 7th, beats the player number 8. So that is one result that you are expected to do. So she has experienced all three results on the first 3 days, and then two draws, and then follows that thing with four losses to players who are like, who belong to the elite, be it, Katrina Lano, then she lost to Lee, then she lost to Humpty for a second time. She loses to Humpty, and that was Humpty's first win, by the way, and then Pan for a second time. Now, imagine, she has lost four matches. She's up against Salimova in the return match, and she's in a losing position. She was all set to lose her fifth match on the trot. That is where things changed, that this girl missed a line and Vaishali kept fighting. She could have, forced a draw at some point, but she kept fighting. And Salimova erred a second time in the game. She wins that. And thereafter, there was no looking back. The following day, she played the top seed, the strongest Russian in the world today. And against her, there was a time when the game could have ended in a draw, but the Russian girl refused to repeat the moves. She was still looking for a win because she was having a horrible tournament by her standards. That helped Vaishali. Then Vaishali won that. Following day, she beats a winless Anna. Anna had a horrible tournament. She couldn't win a single game, and she was a former world championship runner-up. So there you are. Then she beats the defending champion, who was an informed player. Li Tingji was informed. She was almost assured of the second spot much before the final round. And then in the final round, she pulls off another great win against Lano. Lano remained without a loss for a long time. Her losses came towards the end of the tournament. But not easy to beat those two Russians. It was incredible. People are looking at those five wins. I'm looking at the quality of players that she beat. And also, a word about Humpty here. Humpty had a slow start, but throughout the tournament, I saw that she didn't have that cutting edge of old. But despite not playing well, if she could finish joint second, I mean, give credit to her resilience. I mean, her never-say-die spirit, I mean, which has carried her this far. She's not the sharpest of the players that we've seen, but she never ceases to surprise you. Sampat and give credit to her. I mean, in the first 7 rounds, she didn't win a single one. She lost twice and drew 5 times. And then she beats Vaishali. Then she holds 2 games, 2 matches. And then finally she beats the lowest ranked player, Salimova, to feel a lot better. Draws with the top seed, draws with Anna, and then comes back to beat the defending champion, Li Tingzhi. So a very strong finish. And but then also remember one thing. Individually, it gives you a great high to be second in a tournament like this. But if you look at the significance of this event, if you finish first or last, I mean, second or last, it doesn't make a difference. This tournament is all about winning the tournament.
Right. And the person who has won this tournament, coming back to him for one last question, Rakesh. So, Gukesh, it is who's going to be challenging Ding Liren. So, when is this match likely to happen? This year, sometime this year, I believe. But when exactly? And can you talk a little bit about what it takes to prepare for a title match as a challenger? Because earlier you mentioned, for instance, that Gukesh was very good with his opening preparations. But everybody does their opening preparations. So, how difficult it is to have a solid preparation? Or is it, what is the difficulty level in general, and what is it like for a challenger match?
Sampath, see, unlike the days, when every player, the two guys, be the world champion or the challenger, they would have a team of seconds and they would prepare pretty hard. They will look at the opponent's games and try to prepare accordingly. You know your favorite opponent, your favorite opening lines. You also are aware of what your opponent is capable of playing and what his favorite lines are. So a lot of hard work used to go into it. But when this match takes place, it is likely to begin towards the end of November and will go into December. So this will be a 12-game match where both players get to play with, 6 games with black and white.
Do we know anything about the venue yet? Do we know where it's likely
to take place? Not yet. Because initially, FIDE wanted to offer it to the country, which wanted to, host it. So the bidding process is going to start once the potential bidders are aware who 2 players are. Now, this is an all-Asia affair. So chances are that the people from Europe need not be very, very keen to host this match. So likely that it's either China or India or even Dubai. You never know. But then one thing is sure, that these 2 countries with the kind of population they have and also the kind of following which this particular sport has in these 2 countries, there will be no dearth of eyeballs. So, that is one. But talking about the preparation, if I just come back to that, these days you have these supercomputers, database, which is mind-boggling. You have databases running into millions and millions of games where you can easily pick the games played by your opponent, and you can have complete data of how many times, for example, if Gukesh wants to know about Ding, he'll get every single game, every single recorded game, every single rated game played by Ding in his career. And the same applies to Ding, because he can see what all Gukesh has played and what all he has been working on in the recent times. So there's no dearth of data on each other, but the preparation part is the novelty part. What are you going to prepare for your opponent? So this is where your team of seconds also helps even to this day. Like Gukesh will be helped by a lot of individuals. He has a team in place, but the point is that how they are going to look at Ding. Now, Ding this year hasn't had a great form. Although, if you remember, he played in the Vikansi tournament, the Tata Steel event. He didn't do too well there. And thereafter, we haven't really seen him play too many tournaments. But Ding, you can never write him off. He's just too solid. And just go back to the days when he beat Ian Nepomniachtchi to win the world title. That gives you an idea of how strong this player is. And when he has the match experience, which Gukesh doesn't have. But then Gukesh has shown that experience is not everything. So it'll be great fun. It'll be very, very tenacious from both sides. Both these individuals are not going to give up something which has come to them after going through what all they had to go through. So expect a very, very tough match. And anyway, the person taking the lead will always hold that psychological edge. But then it's too early for all that. I think first is let's wait and see whether we are going to have a tournament. A lot of people wanted to be in India so that they can go and visit the tournament. But if you ask Anand, I'm sure Anand is not the one who's going to favor it, because his experience of playing at home way back in 2013 and the last man to win the candidates before what we saw yesterday, Vishwanathan Anand is the man. And he himself, I don't think he's going to say that let's have it in India or in Chennai, because he knows the pressure and what he went through.
Right. I think whether it happens in India or elsewhere, I think this has been a great year already for Indian chess. And we have a long build-up to this match, which as you said, is likely to happen in November, December. I think chess fans in India are going to be watching Gukesh in particular and all the rest of the Wolf Pack, as they have come to be known, pretty closely, leading up to a really fantastic and hopefully a happy climax tournament, the championship match, the 12-game format, which you said, in November, December. I think we can all look forward to that. Thank you so much, Rakesh, for sharing your observations and insights on this extraordinary phenomenon that we've witnessed last 14 days. Thank you so much once again. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Sampath, for this huge opportunity. It's always fun to talk about the sport which a lot of people don't really follow on a day-to-day basis. But I'm sure what Gukesh has done and what Pragyananda has been doing in the last 1 year, I think we'll have a lot more followers of this sport, and a lot of interest is going to get generated again and again with every passing success. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.